In 1962, Wendy Sibbeson was 16, going to an all-girls high school in Alexandria, Virginia.
And had a boyfriend, my first boyfriend. And there was lots of drinking in our sex life. And that was, I think it's because nobody knew how to do sex.
They didn't use birth control, and she got pregnant. Her school was conservative Episcopalian, and she had no idea what to do. This was about a decade before abortion was legalized by Roe v. Wade.
The consequences of being pregnant and 16 in my world was basically capital punishment for having sex. There was literally no one to talk to, and you couldn't tell your parents because they would be devastated.
And she grew up in a family that was by nature secretive. Her father had left his working-class parents in Cleveland to become a professional journalist. He rarely spoke to or about them again. Wendy's mother didn't know her own mother and was raised by a grandmother, but never spoke about the circumstances.
My mother's life as a child was a complete secret. She didn't even know the answers to it herself.
Although today, Wendy thinks her parents actually would have rallied and supported her. Back then, she felt enormous pressure to meet their high expectations. So telling them about the pregnancy felt impossible.
So here I was, this high-performing kid, suddenly bringing down catastrophe upon the house. I just couldn't.
But she also couldn't have a baby. She felt sure of that. And that left one option that she couldn't bring herself to tell almost anyone about for years. This is episode 3 of The Secrets We Keep, a podcast from NEPM about the stories we don't tell, what they say about our world, and what they do to our minds. I'm Karen Brown. Today, the secrets of abortion, as the political winds continue to shift on an issue that already causes intense personal angst. Sometimes secrets are both a sign of political and social trends and a way to get around them. In the same way, revealing secrets can be an act of political and societal defiance.
All right, tonight the fallout from the Supreme Court ruling about abortion rights is growing. This after
now that Roe v. Wade has been overturned, some fear that more women will go back to hiding their abortions after years of being able to speak freely. And that's not just a matter of shame, but rather legal prudence. At the same time, women who kept their abortions secret are now speaking out when they feel safe to do so.
From New York to Los Angeles, protesters took to the streets.
So let's get back to Wendy Sibbeson, more than 60 years ago, a decade before Roe v. Wade.
As I say, I was 16 and I was stuck.
It was 1962. She was accidentally pregnant, and Wendy found out from a schoolmate the phone number of a woman who performed illegal abortions out of her apartment. Two trusted friends helped her raise $300 for the procedure.
The procedure was one of the many ways illegal abortions was done in those days, in which a catheter with an opening at one end is inserted into the uterus up through the vagina and pierces the amniotic sac. And the fluid drains out and causes a miscarriage.
For several years, she didn't tell another soul. Not because she was ashamed of the abortion. That, she says, was an emancipatory experience. But because she couldn't bear to admit she had gotten pregnant in the first place.
You get the abortion to avoid the shame of being unmarried and pregnant and to be able to go on with your life.
Wendy couldn't tell her parents about the abortion without, of course, admitting to the pregnancy, so she committed herself to keeping it all secret. And that deeply affected her relationship with them, which she says became distant from that point on.
There's a way in which your heart is sealed over to protect the urge to speak.
And that sealing of the heart, she says, took an even greater psychological toll.
I think that the keeping of the secret was deeply traumatic to me, that it in many ways changed the way I related to other people as I grew up. I armored myself. I didn't know I had it on, and I didn't know how to take it off.
Hey! Ah!
What changed things for Wendy a decade later was the women's movement of the 1970s.
To protest the Miss America pageant as a symbol of society's exploitation.
By then, she had moved to Western Massachusetts for law school and met a number of activists.
They exist as cells, brigades, associations. There are names as colorful as red stockings and bread and milk.
She was moved by the ascendancy of feminists like Betty Friedan, Gloria Steinem.
This is no simple reform. It really is a revolution.
Everything was changing. The world was changing. And we were coming out of this time in the 60s, in the early 60s, emerging from the straitjacket in many ways, the cultural and political straitjacket of the 50s, into incipient liberation movements.
They were especially inspired by the civil rights movement.
We were just there with bells on. So, you know, as soon as I got here, we started a small women's center in Greenfield, and a women's group, and went around to schools handing out Our Bodies, Ourselves and making teachers mad.
And at some point, she told her compatriots in the women's movement about her abortion. I found it interesting that when I asked her about the revelation, she couldn't say exactly how or when it happened.
I don't remember. There's a lot of blur about that secret.
She guesses she was probably smoking pot with friends, and the fact of her abortion just came out.
And once the secret was out, I was just glad to tell it, because I was happy I had it. It felt stupid to keep it a secret.
Wendy Sibbison is part of a generation of women who formed the backbone of Carrie Baker's research.
Okay. So I'm Carrie Baker. I teach in the program for the study of women and gender at Smith College and have written widely on abortion, violence against women, sexual harassment.
Free ourselves! Free our sisters! Free ourselves!
So every unit I do, I start with history, and I talk about, you know, at the beginning of the women's movement, where things were before women began to organize to change the law. And inevitably, it starts with a speak out.
We want to have some control over the decisions that affect our lives.
All right, will you please sit down or be removed from the...
No, we aren't going to sit down. Why don't you give us some solid answers?
Speakouts arose from the protests of the time, although they were more personal. They were meant to support women talking about stigmatized topics, to defy the silence they felt was unfairly forced upon them.
You know, if it was rape, they'd be blamed, or they were somehow sullied because of that experience. If it was abortion, they were considered immoral, or they were considered, again, slutty. Usually it was slutty. Or if it was domestic violence, it was like, well, what do you do? What, you're not a good wife. How did you cause it?
Baker says most social movements have a point of awareness when the momentum shifts. With sexual harassment and assault, for instance, that happened after the Harvey Weinstein investigation, when women started coming forward with their own Me Too experiences. With abortion rights, it happened when women stopped keeping their abortion secret, especially at those speakouts.
And it is the process of speaking to each other, validating each other, realizing it's not me, it's not my fault, I'm not crazy, it's the system, it's the oppression, it's, you know, the abuse.
At the same time, Baker points out that for years, keeping abortion secret was also a smart thing to do before society was ready to accept it.
It's protective not to speak out. But on the other hand, it's rooted in self-blame and blaming the victim. It's rooted in ideas that you're only a good woman if you're chaste. You know, tons of sex education in the United States is abstinence-only sex ed. And kids are told, don't have sex. It's dangerous. It's, you know, quite frankly, a lot of people are told it's immoral.
But today, as more states pass anti-abortion laws, it goes beyond a vague sense of morality. There are, again, very practical and legal reasons to keep quiet. In some states, like Massachusetts, abortion is still available and perhaps becoming less stigmatized. But in other states, the pendulum is swinging back the other way, like the so-called bounty hunter laws in Texas and Oklahoma that allow private citizens to sue someone in civil court if they helped a friend get an abortion.
I think a lot of these criminal laws and laws against aiding and abetting are about trying to isolate women and keep it so that they can't speak out about their abortions.
Some groups have come up, like We Testify and Shout Your Abortion, expressly to make it okay to talk about having an abortion, and more recently, about miscarriages.
Because miscarriage also is so stigmatized, because it's seen as a failure, like it's a failed pregnancy, and what did you do to cause it?
For me, this again raises questions around what's secrecy and what's privacy. After all, keeping one's reproductive history a secret is also a person's right.
At one level, we shouldn't have to. I mean, it's a private medical decision. Like, you wouldn't tell somebody, oh, I had a wart removed off my foot today. It's like, you don't want to talk about your warts. I mean, nobody wants warts, and nobody wants an abortion.
At this point in our interview and in this podcast, I thought it was the right time to mention that I had an abortion when I was in my early 20s, and I've never kept it a secret, as I told Baker.
Well, I talk to my friends about it all the time.
Right, right.
Do I want to put it on the radio?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if it's a story about secrets and abortion, I'm kind of have to.
She gave that some thought.
Yeah, I mean, there's really no reason to talk about your medical procedures with anybody. It's because it's stigmatized that we get silence, that it's in part, it's not just privacy, it's silence.
Right. It's not just a matter of privacy versus secrecy, it's privacy versus silence. And that's what makes speaking out about the issue political. So now I wonder, going forward in a post-Roe v. Wade world, will women keep their abortion secret more often or less?
Yeah, I mean, I think it can go both ways.
To make sure that abortion doesn't go underground again, Ms. Magazine revived a signature drive that began in the early 70s.
72 or so, they did this. They published the names of 50 or so really high-profile women like Gloria Steinem, who all said, I've had an abortion.
And in 2022, the magazine reprinted that article and asked people to write in if they've had an abortion and published the results.
In here somewhere, I mean, I know I have it. Oh, here it is. So these are all the names of people that wrote in saying that they'd had an abortion. Look at that.
Wow, it's thousands.
It's a lot. It's 10,000 plus signers.
As she says, people have a sense that speaking out is a way to make sure abortion is not considered shameful again.
And the way that we destigmatize it is talk about it. And so we need to be talking about it.
I'll tell anybody almost anything except for a couple of little things, you know, which is why I'm talking to you.
Rachel is a 60-year-old woman in Western Massachusetts. Like many others, she now talks about her abortion in a way she didn't for years. And yes, the reason is Dobbs, the court decision that overturned Roe v. Wade. That said, she has asked us to use only her first name.
I'm as blunt as you can be. I'll tell you, I'm going to the urogynecologist, and here's what they're going to do. I don't care. But there are a couple of things in my life over the last probably 40 years.
The first was a serious problem with alcohol. It started in high school and over time got out of control.
For the last 5 years of my drinking, I drank every day. I blacked out every night. And I thought, I mean, I was trying to always feel better about who I was.
But at some point, she realized she couldn't keep living like that. After a few attempts, she got sober at the age of 24.
I didn't talk about it except with the people who helped me get and stay sober. And I don't know why I thought it was a big secret, because if you'd seen me before I stopped drinking, you'd know I had a problem. The consequence to keeping a secret is I think that I just put more stress on myself, and it was more like it enhanced the shame that I already felt.
Now Rachel talks freely about her alcoholism. Like other types of addiction, it's more widely understood to be a disease and not a moral failing. But that openness has taken a lot longer for another secret.
My other big secret is that I've had more than one abortion, and they were medically necessary, according to my doctors. I was also not in a position where I could become a mother.
She had one friend she told about her abortions, but no one else. It's not that she believed abortion was wrong. On the contrary, she says she's always been fiercely pro-abortion rights. But for decades, she even lied to doctors when they asked how many pregnancies she had. The only pregnancy she acknowledged was her daughter, born in 1998.
I didn't even tell my first husband for a really long time. I don't know where the shame came from. I mean, my parents were hippies. I guess it goes back to that sort of underlying feeling I've had my whole life that I have done something wrong.
She did tell her daughter when she was a teenager.
She's a very staunch feminist, destroy the patriarchy, and all that kind of stuff. And it just came up one day. And I said, well, I've had abortions. And she said, I figured you did. And I was like, how did you figure that? And she said, I don't know, I just figured you did.
But even then, Rachel didn't talk to people outside her family.
I've learned in the course of my life that sharing a secret makes it less painful. But this was a secret I couldn't share.
Until something happened in the wider world that went beyond the shame she felt personally.
With the ruling, at least 8 states have made abortion illegal, and more than a dozen more expected to ban or severely restrict it. But abortion rights supporters in conservative states are not giving up.
When Roe v. Wade was overturned, I was so mad. I was so mad I wanted to, like, hold up a sign in the middle of the street and say, I've had an abortion or two, and if you don't like that, you can go F yourself. And I drafted a post on Facebook, and I showed it to a friend of mine. She's like, you might want to just take a day before you post that. And I was like, yeah, you're right.
But she did start talking to friends and other people she knew.
And guess what I found out? Lots of them had had abortions or had sisters who had had abortions. Or, you know, like, it was way more people than I, and it was people I was surprised.
And she's only gotten more angry and more public about it.
I probably shouldn't say this on the radio, but I'll be part of an underground railroad if I have to. I don't care. I'll drive people to Canada. I'll drive people wherever they need to go. You know, you need to fly out of Texas, I'll fly you. It doesn't feel shameful anymore. And it's funny that making it illegal in many states makes it feel less shameful to me.
But going public about her own abortion is still not easy, even though we're not saying her last name. For one, she works in real estate and worries she could lose clients.
Because I do get, like, elderly clients and people who might, yeah. who would love me, but might think twice if they knew I'd had an abortion. And I can't really afford that.
In the end, her daughter convinced her to do this interview.
She said, you should do it. And I said, why? And she said, there are a lot of girls or women her age who are probably scared to talk about this, and hearing you talk about it might help them. And I was like, oh, God. Just, how about if you just stab me in the heart, you know, you little smarty? And she was right, though.
So let's get back to Wendy Sibbison, the lawyer who had a secret abortion in the early 60s. When Wendy was in middle age, she finally told her mother. And that led to a much closer relationship in the last years of her mother's life.
I did tell her a lot of things that were private to me, and it was great. That's intimacy. You can't have intimacy with deep secrets. It doesn't work.
Wendy went on to become a human rights lawyer in Greenfield. She's now 76 and retired, and she never held back again about her abortion, including to her own daughter, a teenager at the time, with whom she's always tried to foster openness.
You know, she had secrets, but not in the way I did. I think she understood it wasn't a condition of my being her mother that she protect me from, you know, unwelcome information. It was more clear that I could hear stuff. So
how did you make that clear to her?
You know, maybe by telling her about my own experiences as a, you know, teachable moment. Get in trouble, tell your parents.
Today, Wendy says she's open about most personal things, but not everything. As a Buddhist, she believes in what's called right speech.
That could include any kind of secret, but told at the right time, in the right manner, and to the right person. So, the general spilling of secrets, I think, doesn't necessarily lead to happiness. But I think keeping secrets leads to misery.
Wendy had another abortion in the 1980s, and that time it was legal, and she talked about it openly. Now that Roe v. Wade has been overturned, she hopes women will continue to say, "I had an abortion and I'm not sorry." But she knows not everyone will feel that way as the legal fight over abortion enters its next wave.
Humans on the ground are going to be saying, "This is my body, it's my right," and others are going to be deathly ashamed and hiding. And everything in between, it's going to be just bigger. It's just going to be bigger.
You've been listening to Episode 3 of The Secrets We Keep, a podcast about the stories we don't tell, what they say about our world, and what they do to our minds. It's a production of NEPM, written and reported by me, Karen Brown, edited by Sam Hudzik, music by Katie Simroe. Next episode, we'll look at the secrets around our very origins, how an explosion in genetic testing has led so many people to realize the big secret in their life is actually themselves.
It was irrefutable, and it was also sort of staggeringly painful and destabilizing. Like, literally, it felt like the room tilted, the floor tilted.
There was this long silence, and she said, "I promised I'd never talk about this."
There were, you know, neighborhood jokes about me being the mailman's daughter and things like that, which I didn't realize at the time how true that could have been.
That's next on The Secrets We Keep. Thank you for listening.